Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome everybody to the holiday version of Pro Wrestling Interviews. This is Dr. John Stamey. I am live from Travelers Rest, South Carolina. Beautiful, sunny. We had a little snow today, but it was gorgeous. And we've got a
action-packed
show tonight.
Right.
We are full, and we're going to have a great time. And I want to turn this shindig over to the one and only, the amazing one, the amazing Velvet. Velvet, how are you doing tonight?
Doing well. I'm doing well. Ready for a great show. Ready to get it started.
Why don't you introduce our co-hosts and our guests?
Okay. Well, tonight, first off, I'd like to say a big happy greeting to the Maestro of Professional Wrestling, Papa Show. How are you this evening, sir?
Miserable. The weather sucks. hating life. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's the worst.
Don't turn heel.
I don't know why I'm on this freaking show. I mean, what the hell? But other than that, I'm great.
Boy.
Great to be here with you guys. Great to be here.
Turn heel, Stro. Turn heel.
Way to stick
love
it in.
Love y'all.
There. All right.
Love y'all, man.
And
some TP for you.
Right. And the man who has one of the deepest voices and is very, very scary. The man is Sinister, Mr. Gregory Mason. Hello, Greg. Sinister, how
hey,
are you?
I'm doing great. Great being to come near you guys.
Cool. Awesome.
Sinister.
And then the one that always has
Sinister's
a one.
Sinister's my hero.
You know, if you could control your running partner, we'd be okay. I want to talk to and introduce the manager extraordinaire from the Midwest himself, Chaz Moretti. How are you,
well,
Chaz?
Thank you for that kind introduction. Control my running partner? What are you, joking? 7 years it's been unsuccessful. You think it's going to happen in 5 minutes?
You know what? You and I are both in the same boat. We got people talking about us, and we're bad people, and then it's all good. So whatever.
Oh, it's you know what, Aaron? It's always all good.
We made
so
a great impression. We made a great impression.
Since we'll continue with Dr. John's intro style. Greetings from God's Refrigerator, otherwise known as Chicago, where the snow is white till it hits the ground, then it turns black. Because, God forbid, you should have something that looks nice in Chicago.
Right. Can't have that.
those great chemtrails, right?
Yes.
Oh,
no,
yeah.
No, don't
sure.
even start, dude. Come on.
Those chemtrails, yep. Brother.
You camp down the stairs right. to the front walk, and you got to keep on shoveling. Love it.
That's right. And last but not least on the panel, from North Carolina, another podcast great man is Todd Saxon. Hello, Todd. How are you?
I am outstanding, the supernatural, ecstatic to be here and humbled to be among this most elite group this evening.
Todd's even supernatural in the wrestling show. That's amazing.
That's all right. Todd,
hey, we'll see
awesome. That's awesome.
Todd, let me know if you need representation so you can get higher up on the introduction lineup here. I mean, you know, having you at the bottom of the car isn't quite fair to you. Just saying.
Oh, Lord. All right. And our guest tonight from Cincinnati, Ohio, he is another manager, and he's a spooky manager at that. His name is Barnabas Spector. How are you doing this evening, sir?
Amazing, Velvet. I am fantastic. I got a nice workout in earlier today. I've got some Starbucks in me, and now I feel right at home. A gentleman named Sinister, and sounds like Stro has turned heel, and sounds like my kind of company to keep this evening.
There you go.
All right. Welcome home, brother. Welcome home.
Thank you.
Damn right. You know why we like each other? Because nobody else likes us.
That's right.
There it is.
Now that that's like the elephant married. Has been noticed in the room.
Right.
All right. Well, David, to get started and to let our panelists and listeners know, how did you get started in this crazy business? What got you in this crazy business and why you love it so much? So the floor is yours.
Well, you know, even though Cincinnati, Ohio has become my second home, I'm actually originally from upstate New York. I actually grew up not far away from where Hacksaw Jim Duggan is from in the Glens Falls area. But I've been a lifelong fan. You would think being in New York that WWF would be my first exposure to wrestling, but that would not be true. Actually, my first exposure to the wild and sometimes wacky world of pro wrestling was through watching world-class championship wrestling out of Dallas, Texas. And it was really the Von Erich, absolutely. And the Von Erich Freebirds feud was really what hooked me as a fan, as a child. And, you know, even from an early age, I took note and was really drawn to the various managers, you know, everyone from Skandar Akbar to Percy Pringle III. And, you know, one of my, you know, someone that I actually have studied in depth, and that would be Gary Hart.
Welcome back. Sorry, I got cut off.
amen on Gary Hart, bro.
Yes, sir.
Gary Hart, definitely a huge influence, and of course, over time, and, you know, in expanding my horizons in regards to watching other brands like the WWF or the NWA or Bill Watzel, UWF, through, you know, following sport either through television or through the magazines, all the after mags. My love and appreciation for this art form just continued to grow. And, you know, of course, I was drawn to, you know, the undeniable GOATs of pro wrestling managers, Bobby Heenan, Jimmy Hart, et cetera, Jim Cornette. As I got a little older, the idea of wanting to get involved on the other side of the rail seemed to become a little more of a reality. I started to train at a school called World of Hurt Wrestling in Schenectady, New York, in my mid-20s. A lot of stutter starts and stops, a lot of life getting in the way of my dream. And at one point, probably 4 or 5 years ago, I started to go a bit of a different direction and got into photography and video work. And I was working for a number of different pro wrestling promotions in addition to MMA and boxing throughout Ohio, Indiana, Kentucky, et cetera. And always in the back of my mind, still the dream there, still wanting to be involved. And at some point in 2018, that switch got flipped in my mind, and it made me decide that, you know, this has been a lifelong passion and love. I'm as close to it as I could possibly get. It's time for me to stop denying myself when I know deep down in my heart and soul that I need to be in the ring performing. So I took the steps necessary, made the transition, once again began my training with Cody Hawk in here in Cincinnati, Cody Hawk being the trainer of
awesome.
John Moxley. Yes, John Moxley and Sammy Callahan, Eli Drake, et cetera, et cetera. But Cody Hawk is fantastic.
Right.
I've worked with a number of different people over the years, training-wise, but he is above and beyond the right trainer for me, someone that I have always felt comfortable in talking to and in learning from. And in many regards, I owe my current success to him because he was willing to take, because, you know, it may be a little shocking to say, but I'm not exactly a spring chicken. So to take a mature fella such as myself and mold and shape me to a point where I consistently am out there on the road getting bookings every weekend, I tip my hat and I can't say thank you enough to Cody for his training. But all of that, and, you know, without going into the War and Peace version of my own personal story, a lot of that has brought me to here today, to where I'm at as being an individual that I like to think transcends the moniker of manager. As a matter of fact, I address myself as the leader, David Barnabas Spector, because those that know, those in the business, those that I have under my tutelage follow me, because I am truly the leader. Everyone across the country, anyone that follows pro wrestling, is not in competition with me, but rather they are following my lead.
Nice.
Ooh, I like
nice. I like that. I like that too.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, you mentioned of being in photography. You know, some of the greats started out being photographers, like Dwayne DeRock Johnson, Jim Cornette, and just to list a few of the many names that, you know, that started off, you know, to being getting in photography before they started in the business.
Paul,
so that's
Paul
really cool.
Heyman was another one as well. You're absolutely right, sir.
Paul,
yes,
Paul
sir.
You know,
Paul Heyman,
so
yeah,
was,
exactly.
So was someone who doesn't get a lot of credit, which was Scott Romer, a.k.a. Saul Creechman.
Yeah,
Scott
yeah,
Romer, yeah.
A bruiser back in the mid-'80s.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Very nice.
Like, and it was a great way to you know, kind of infiltrate the business, for a lack of a better way to describe it. It was a great way to, you know, be able to study talent, to start to really understand psychology, to find out the inner workings more so of the business, to make connections, which was a huge thing that has paid dividends.
Oh yeah.
Over time, and that, you know, getting those relationships, because realistically, everybody wants to be friends with a photographer. So
right.
It certainly comes in handy from time to time.
Now, you got to be
Jimmy
careful
Suzuki
with that, because I made friends with the photographer and then I married her.
Shows. Yeah.
No.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
Yeah, I was mentioning earlier, Jimmy Suzuki was a good friend of mine that did the photography, different events, you know, all over the place. So, yeah, it was always a great pleasure bumping into him. He's photography for like over here in the States, overseas, and all that.
Oh, yeah. That's awesome.
Let me ask
that's
a brief
cool.
question. Now, your gimmick last name is Spectre, correct?
That's correct, yes, sir.
Okay, I'm very sorry to hear about your Uncle Phil. And if he wasn't your Uncle Phil, run with it anyway, brother, because it's good heat.
Right? Exactly.
Wow.
Just a word of advice, if Phil Spectre wasn't your kayfabe uncle, make him your kayfabe uncle and run with it,
right?
It's great heat.
Exactly.
Well, you know, it's funny that, and this is an absolute shoot, it's funny that you bring that up, because that is legit where I got the last name from. Because originally, and I still intend on kind of retouching back on that, but the original concept for everything that I do, my faction is Darkness Worldwide. In many
nice.
Ways, you could think of it as a modern day version of Devastation Incorporated.
Darkness.
But yes, but initially, music was a part of the equation, because there were some local bands that I was kind of helping to promote online, and with the music tie-in, and knowing Phil Spector's very sordid, seedy past, I felt that was the perfect last name to attach to, you know, this, you know, alternate version of myself.
Well, it worked, because that's the first thing I thought of when I heard your gimmick last name.
Exactly.
And you're the only other person other than myself, after I tell people, but you're the only person that came up with that or spoke that before me saying anything. So I appreciate you picking up on that. Thank you.
No problem.
Awesome. Oh, my gosh.
Now,
so
you had mentioned earlier that Gary Hart was a big influence on you, correct?
That is correct.
Stro, you want to tell our guest here what your favorite word that Gary Hart ever uttered was?
Oh, Lord.
Oh, that's a no-brainer. Kabuki. I mean, Gary Hart's like one of the all-time – not only was he one of the all-time greatest managers of all time, he's one of the greatest bookers of all time, too.
Yes.
Yes,
man,
sir.
Man.
Yes,
no
and,
one.
And his association with Kabuki and with
Kabuki,
Bruiser Brody and Muda and Terry Funk and all of that just
okay,
resonates
Muda.
In my mind. You know, his look, and those piercing eyes, the voice and the promo. It just there was always something about Gary Hart that stayed with me, and And it's something that has heavily influenced everything that I do to this very day. In regards to influences for my career path, I mean, Gary Hart, and I would say secondary would be Paul Ellering, are two managers I absolutely
have looked at for
performance purposes and for professionality are the two that I look to the most for inspiration.
I can see Paul Ellering in your look, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
But and again, thank you. I sometimes I get that a little more often than anything else, and you know I absolutely appreciate that and consider that a huge compliment. And you know Paul's work. I mean, he was an amazing promo, and the fact that you know he transcended being an on-air manager and actually you know fully took care of Hawk and Animal on the road in all aspects. That is something that I've always been drawn to and has appealed to me because in many ways I try to do the same exact thing with the talent that I work with.
Mm-hmm.
He's a very intelligent man also. Very intelligent man.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, the Wall Street Journal was not a gimmick. That's him. And that's why that was so perfect is, and such a versatile guy, the running of the Iditarod. I mean, it's just mm-hmm. you wouldn't associate that with a pro wrestling manager, but that kind of goes to show just how much of a true Renaissance man he really is.
You know, they showed a picture of Paul at the Iditarod with the rolled up Wall Street Journal. That had to be a sight to see. Him mushing 10 sled dogs with the Wall Street Journal rolled up in his hand. That had to be awesome.
As long as he didn't hit him with it.
That's right. Yes.
No, he just.
I need a new dog.
Give him a place to go.
Yeah, you know, I went to a wedding last year, and they asked me how the steak was, and I said, "Oh, it's great. It still has marks on it from the jockey was hitting it."
Oh, I got a dog.
That's funny. Change the caddy, brother.
That's funny. So, David, what is your with everything that's going on in the world and all this craziness and COVID and all that? What do you think from midsummer going into fall, what do you think that the indies are going to be thrive again, going to get back on their feet, or you think we're just in for a long haul of doom and gloom?
Realistically, and you know, I hope that I'm wrong because you know, for all of us that are involved with the pro wrestling business, I mean, this is in our blood. This is what makes us feel alive. So, and I mean, and it's not just pro wrestling. I mean, you know, I'm a big music fan. One of the things that I truly enjoy doing outside of pro wrestling is going to see live music, and the music industry, live performances have, you know, been just as severely hit, if not more so, than all of us in the wrestling business. So, you know, of course, I would love to see, you know, things improve and for things to be safe and for restrictions to be lifted and for the business to be thriving. If I'm going to be realistic, though, I think there's a really good chance that, you know, places will run. Places are running now under, you know, strict conditions under, you know, limited attendance, you know, precautionary measures. But before things get back to any kind of real normal, I mean, I really think that we're probably looking at sometime probably next year. And that's a little bleak, but at the same time, though, you know, at this point, I originally, when everything started, I was under the idea that I was going to wait it out and that I wasn't going to work anywhere until it was completely safe. And, you know, just at some point I decided that for my mental sanity, my mental health, and for the love I have of the business that, you know, I, in a safe manner, don't get me wrong, I still am very concerned about everything, but as safely as I can possibly do it, that I needed to not live in the plastic bubble and I needed to get back out on the road and continue and resume what I had started, because I felt like before everything had hit, before COVID happened, I was starting to build some all-important momentum. And when that all happened, I had had a lot of things in the works, as we all, I'm sure, did. But I had plans on, you know, going to New York, going to Las Vegas, plans to come to the Carolinas, et cetera, and all of that obviously fell by the wayside. So slowly, very slowly, I'm trying to rebuild with new clients and my current, as I like to call him, my morbid masterpiece, my 300-pound abomination, Kronos the Berserker, is a legit 300-pound gentleman who is wears an incredibly intimidating horror-themed mask, and he is incredibly athletic and just an absolute brute inside the ring. And for my style, he is an absolute perfect fit. So he and I are slowly but surely trying to rebuild and to move, you know, what we do forward. You know, again, shows are running now. Shows will continue to run throughout the year. But to circle back around to your question, I really realistically don't feel that we're going to be out of all of this mess probably until sometime next year. And even that is, you know, I hate to say it, but I think that even that's a bit of wishful thinking.
Feels like a Mad Max movie, doesn't it? Doesn't it feel like
sure
a Mad Max movie?
It kind of does, yes.
Yeah. I'm figuring it's all going to be over by Thursday. Just my opinion.
I hope you're right. I would love for that to be spot on right.
It would be awesome.
99.6% survival rate. It's all political nonsense. They're trying to work workers. Come on.
Exactly.
And besides, let's talk about it like it is. You know, they say you're limited to, like here in Illinois, you're limited to 100 people, you're limited to 50 people. Let's be honest, most of these feds couldn't draw 40. Nothing's changed for them.
Well,
that's
in
true.
Some cases, that's absolutely true, yes.
Well, my thing is, like here, they said this had restriction. My direct competition averages 160 people. He had 160 people at a show, his last one, at Christmas. I said, so where was the reduction in what he normally carries? There was none. So okay. So
it's all perception, Velvet.
So, well, here's the thing. Here's another thing. This cat just told one of my guys, he ran into him, the guy who runs the other promotion works at a pawn shop, and one of my guys happened to go in there to look for something and saw him. And he started talking about Susan and Judy and me and this and that. And he's talking all nice and blah, 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 blah. Then he said he started talking about his next show. His next show is going to cost him between $5,000 and $6,000. Why? You only draw 160 people at $10 a pop. So tell me where you made money. You're not. This cat has already lost one house completely. And he's in another one that he's renting. I don't know what's going on with that. But my whole thing is I try to talk to the guy, and he doesn't want to listen to me. Says he loves me to death, but when he's with his people, I'm the worst thing that ever lived. But then when he's not around people, then I'm the greatest thing that ever lived. Well, my thing is do you, that's fine, but I don't want to hear it when you're homeless again. And you need some help. The answer is going to be no. You don't listen. These people are riding you like a government mule. If you want to be ridden like a government mule, more power to you, buddy. About making money.
He'd be better off him and his crew sit in the chairs and watch and invite fans to the ring and watch them perform. Have a better draw.
No
that,
kidding.
That way, I think.
Well,
good God.
Let them eat the popcorn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right? Exactly. Well, you know, he's so busy trying to be liked. He caters the food. His wife either makes it or goes and gets it and prepares it, and they have food like we're WWE. They stay at his house. Most of the big names will come and stay at his house, and they'll party there for the rest of the weekend or that night. The guy who writes, Mike Mooneyham, who writes the column here, who retired as an editor at the paper here but still writes the Sunday wrestling column, he goes over there. He's nice to me in person, and then as soon as I walk away, he's throwing darts at me. So I'm like, yeah, whatever, dude. I really don't care because y'all are losing money. Y'all go ahead and lose money. I'm not about
to
really
lose money. I'm like going to the moon. But if I go broke, what good am I?
Right. Well, you know,
see,
they can always run a show. If they really want to go broke, they could always run a show at the Ocean Center, put about 65 in a 9,500-seat arena, say how great they are. Oh, wait, that's already happened.
Oh,
damn. Yeah. All right, strike. Yeah, forget that idea.
So,
yeah, Velvet, there are a lot of people in the business that are, you know, living the gimmick. And, you know, Roddy Piper talked about it in his book. Roddy Piper talking about it in his book, he talked about the sickness, and the sickness can take on all different forms and fashions. And we all love pro wrestling. We're all dedicated to the craft. We've all gone way above and beyond what any normal human being would do to be a part of this. But there has to be a breaking point where, you know, some sense of, you know, just rational thought and, you know.
Well, this guy don't have any, dude. He couldn't even put a ring together.
Apparently
no,
not. Apparently not.
Rational
no,
thought.
Here's something.
What's rational thought in this business?
He trained me. Never finished. Listen, he never finished his training. He was in a tag team that was pretty decent, but he was horrible. His partner was good. He went to bar. Now, I've been out of the business, okay? I packed it in about 2002. I packed my ring up. I didn't wrestle. So about 2004, he wanted to run some shows. I said, that's fine. He goes, you going to help me? I went, no. I said, I'm not doing anything. He goes, well, can I use your ring? I said, you can use my ring. I will move it from the backyard to the driveway, but I'm going to be working. The wife's not going to be home. You're going to have to pick it up and set it up and do that for your show. Oh, that's not a problem. Well, he comes over, and only him and his girlfriend show up. And he was like, you weren't there to help me. I said, I told you I was going to be at work. I'm not going to be there. Sorry. And he goes, well, my guys didn't show up. I said, that sounds like a you problem, not a me problem. So they got it in the truck. They got it over there. Listen, they got it over there. They had their show. He came back, and they didn't take it out of the truck. And then he started whining, bitching, pissing, and moaning. My wife came outside and goes, let me tell you something. She goes, I've touched that ring more than you've ever touched that ring. I've set that ring up and I've tore it down. I even set it up and tore it down when I was pregnant with my daughter. She goes, I won't hear nothing come out your mouth. We let you use that ring for free. He did not charge you. I told him to charge you $500, which my husband did not do. Let you have it. The boy didn't even know how to set up a ring. I said, so you mean to tell me the entire 3 years you were with me, you didn't know how to put up the ring and take it down? Oh, that means you didn't pay your dues. Don't know how to do it.
Exactly.
He must have forgot his Rosetta Stone on how to put up a ring.
I don't know. But, yeah, I will tell you how I feel, Astro. I just don't like the fact that you can – I mean, you want to blame everybody else for your shortcomings, but you're going to let all these people ride you like a government mule and say, oh, my show was great. Dude, you spent $5,000 and you only made $1,600.
I'd like to see him get pregnant and try to set up a ring.
Yeah, right.
Imagine
That'd be awesome. All right, getting back on track. Getting back.
There's
on.
A track?
No, there's not. We fell off that long time ago. We fell off that a little long time ago.
Yeah, the crackle
so,
like the spiral graph.
Sinister. Do you have any
yeah.
questions for our guests so we can get this thing, this train somewhere back off of whatever we went off on?
Woo-woo!
Well, not exactly, but one thing I will say that something you just said and something that everybody's been contributing to, a lot of these guys, they don't want to pay their dues, these new guys. And that's what I usually have a problem with, you know, in past organizations I've been with, because, you know, I had to pay my dues, just like you say, you had to pay your dues, help set up the rain, do this, do that, and, you know, and listen to the right people. And like now, everybody want everything handed to them. And, you know, that's what eats me up right now. And I hate it because in WCW, to pay my dues, I had to help set up the ring with the ring crew. That was if you was a newbie, that's what you had to do. And these guys today, And these guys today, they want to be treated like queens. I mean, I don't know if they wearing boxers or they wearing thongs. I mean, they like more. Yeah, well, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to say thongs, but skirts.
That's all
right. You know, Pistol Pat Watley was a legend. You know what I mean?
You're dead on.
He's a
wrestling
legend. And he's like driving the ring truck, sitting up the ring, taking it down each and every night.
Well, that
and he didn't complain.
Klondike
Bill. No, not at all. I mean, Charles Robinson.
Charles
Robinson's been in the business for
25
years.
WCW. We talked about stuff all the time. Yeah. He was like one of my mentors. WCW. He gave me the idea about the wand and the whole maestro thing and everything. And he was like driving a ring truck up and down.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
well,
I mean, look at Little Nate. Little Nate is still setting up and tearing down at WWE. The guy has been around forever.
That's his job. Well, that's his job because you know why?
Exactly.
Because he knows how, what, when, and why, and where. And a lot of these people, sometimes they get so many people in and out the door that are on these crews. He's the steadiest one they got. So they said, you know what? You're in charge of that. We need somebody to be in charge of this. And
I still do it every now and then at the wrestling shows. If I see some ring
crew
needs help, I'll jump in. Shoot.
So do
he
I.
Sure does. He helps us out all the time, man. And I appreciate that.
We had a show
too.
Down in Princeton, Illinois one time. It was a charity show for kids called the Rumble for the Kids, right? End of the night rolls around, and all the rookies took off. They left me and four other vets and the vet that owned the ring to take down the ring and the setup, and we did. And then when we got to the VFW, where they were holding the post-match dinner, all these kids were eating. Well, the one vet that was in charge of all the rookies went around to each one of them and dumped their food in the garbage and said, that's what they get for not taking down the ring.
Daggum right.
If you don't love your workplace, man, you don't need to be in it. You know what I mean?
The disconnect now with the newer crop of young cats coming into the business is that there's not an understanding of the fact that paying dues is part of the initiation process to gain the respect of your peers. You know, ultimately, this is, you know, if you think about, you know, we're all performers and entertainers, but this is a business. You know, you think about this in the terms of a business. You know, what is the easiest route to go to do business with people down the road? Do you want to rub people the wrong way right from Jump Street by not paying dues and not doing the things that you're asked to do, you know, and have business be difficult where people don't want to work with you down the road? Or do you want to go ahead and pay your dues and do the time-honored tradition and actually earn the respect of the locker room so that when you do business with X, Y, and Z down the road, people actually, want to work with you? Want to actually participate and do what's best for you, them, and for the match. I mean, even myself as a manager, I still, you know, I train as a wrestler. I still pay dues. I still set up and tear down the ring. You know, I do everything that would be expected of anyone in the business. There's no exception. Just because I'm a manager doesn't exclude me from doing, you know, whatever. And a lot of that is because of, you know, I feel it would be disrespectful to this art form for me not to do that. And honestly, as a businessman, again, the thing that I'm trying to do while I'm on the road, while I'm traveling, while I'm going to different organizations is, you know, I'm there to do business, good business. Good business for the Fed I'm with, good business for my crew, good business for our opponent. You know, it's not just a matter of, you know, and here's the other component of this, a whole lot of selfishness going on. People only concerned about, you know, quote unquote, getting their stuff in. You know, the big picture is, you know, every time we come and participate and perform, you know, I know it's kind of a cliched thing with WWE now. They talk about creating moments, but in a lot of ways, they're spot on right. I mean, people come out to shows live, you know, for the experience. You know, you're creating a moment for them to remember. And, you know, my goal with each and every event, each and every match, each and every promo segment, whatever the case may be, is I want to do my best to make sure that we're creating a moment that those fans are going to remember when they leave the building.
It has nothing to do with flippity-flops and dives and whatever else. It's a matter of connecting with them on an emotional level through whatever we do from a storytelling aspect in the ring or through a promo. It's making sure that they leave happy, that they leave with a great memory. But to get to that point, to even create that moment, there has to be solid respect and cooperation with everyone involved. And that goes right back to making sure that dues are being paid, again, to have that baseline of respect from the locker room from top to bottom.
Exactly.
And that's my tirade. But
you're right on the head.
But
you're right, man. It takes all of us to make it work.
Yeah, but I think the correlation that you've touched on isn't just so much looking at our business or our sport in a microcosm. It's a reflection of our society. Our society right now, and I hate to sound, you know, like my father or like my grandfather, but the younger generation has zero clue, not so much zero respect, but zero clue what's gone on historically and the ramifications of history upon our current society.
The younger generation has zero clue on anything and everything that has to do with life.
Yeah, I mean, it mirrors in our business. You take a look at wrestling's always been a mirror of society. You know, back in the 60s, they were still utilizing the idea of Nazis and communist Russians and creating those types of heel personas, and most of your baby faces were all Americans, you know, and it still played upon that good versus evil. Well, now you're getting personas that make no sense. You got a guy who goes, you know, what's your persona? And he looks at you like you're from outer space. Oh, look at my great gear. I didn't ask you about your gear. I asked you about your persona. What are you trying to convey while you're in the ring? And they can't tell you because they're trying to copy a damn video
like
game.
The next
it's stupid.
We're shin pads like
yeah,
the next
right?
guy. I look just like him.
Yeah,
but with that disconnect, these guys don't understand that this is a brotherhood. They don't want to be a part of it. They just want to get over. That's all they care about. I got to get my stuff in, and I got to go over. They don't care about
who are they looking
there.
Who are they looking to pop? Are they looking to pop the crowd or the boys in the back?
They're popping. No, they're looking to pop
their
friends.
It seems like the boys in the back more often than not, and that's sad because that's,
yes.
You know, that's the last people really should be care about. It should be the paying audience. That's the only reason
agreed.
Why people have the privilege of being in the ring is because of paying audience.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. Somebody clap. Somebody clap. Yes.
Agreed.
Yes.
Totally agree.
Well, it's participation trophies for starters. They're used to getting that so they don't have to earn anything to get that first reward. That's part of it.
Amen.
They're growing up in this gaming platform era where they can get all these game cheats and stuff like that, and suddenly they can be one of the top 10 in a game, and they think it works like that. They don't know about paying dues. Now, look, I don't have any wrestling background, just for those that don't know me, but I am a retired Marine. I bloody
Perfect.
Well paid my dues. I know about those. It's funny.
Yes, sir.
Talk about setting up the ring and all that. That's working parties. We go to hold an event for something. We did this with many a Toys for Tots events when I worked with 1st Battalion, 23rd Marines out of Houston. We'd have to get there early, set stuff up, and all that stuff came in. It didn't miracle itself to where it was, you know, to the distribution point, to the logistics in between, or any of that stuff. That was more work, more effort. The old sarcasm of the Jarheads, there ain't no party like a working party. That was part of it. You just, you know, it's the little things that make something work. I swear these people would assume that they could build a house without building a foundation.
I agree.
And the people that made it this business will tell you first bat. They'll tell you firsthand that they wouldn't be nowhere near where they're at today without the people that helped them along the way.
Yes,
that's
sir.
The God's honest truth.
Velvet, but you mentioned this a few moments ago about the brotherhood of wrestling, and I'm sorry, was it just Todd that was speaking?
Yeah.
Todd, you're the Marine, correct?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Well, first off, thank you so much for your service to the country, sir. You've more than paid your fair share of dues, because paying dues ain't just in wrestling, it's in life, brother. So you've definitely more than paid your dues. But you talked about the work party, and Velvet, you talked about the brotherhood. I mean, realistically, that's where the brotherhood is forged and formed, is in doing the work. It's in paying the dues. It's in making the towns. That's where the brotherhood is solidified. It's not just, you know, jumping in the ring and doing X, Y, and Z. It's all of the you know, those shared times, putting in the grunt work, doing what needs to be done to make a show happen, traveling to the next town together. That's truly where the brotherhood comes into play. And I think you're spot on right, man, in the fact that I don't think that there's really any true understanding of how important that brotherhood and that sisterhood really is overall, to just not just for business purposes, but just honestly for the enjoyment of being a part of the business, period.
Well, you also got to look at the safety aspect of it, too. We're supposed to watch each other's back. I got your back, you got my back. But if you're being a little jerk bag over there, I've got to go to the next three towns and watch you be a jerk all the time, I'm not going to watch your back.
Sure.
I'm not going to help you out if something breaks down. That's your fault.
You know, Velvet, you're absolutely right.
But it shouldn't be like that. But it's going to be like that because you don't respect the older generation who's still in the business, who are still fighting for the same thing that you are and trying to help you be successful. But you just want to be a superstar from the jump street.
And that very reason is why back in the day, the business was so tight-knit. They wouldn't let just anybody in the business.
Correct.
Because not everybody can respect the business.
Well, you know, going along with that, there's a worker out there right now that shot himself in the foot, and you're reading about it online more and more each day, that certain promotions don't want to work with this guy because he's a jerk to fans, he's a jerk to the boys in the locker room, he's not offering any advice because he had his 15 minutes of fame in the E. And I'm not going to mention the guy's name, but I will mention his gimmick. He was the first one to play into all this video game nonsense, and now he's going to play himself out of the business.
Hey, honey, you need to put toilet paper in the bathroom.
After you clean it.
Love it.
Wow.
Oh, Shooter McGee over here. But no, I mean, let's call it like it is. I mean, I never met the guy. I'm not going to pass judgment on him. But TJP's not making any friends these days. Yeah. And, of course, what was his gimmick?
Absolutely
his
not.
Gimmick was player one. Are you joking me? Player number one, really?
It's amazing when you're talking to younger cats in the locker rooms and you start asking them, like, you know, who do you watch or who are your influences or, you know, what are some favorite matches of yours? And you kind of get a blank stare because for a lot of these younger kids, like, their initiation to wrestling was the video games. You know, that's the reason why matches are the way they are
Starman.
Now. Because of video games.
Oh, I love Starman. Starman was awesome. I love the little manager with the cane that came out midway during the game out of nowhere and didn't tell you that he was coming out to the hunt-in.
Yeah, where'd
good
that
too.
Guy come from? Oh, my God.
But fellas, I remember when I was young getting involved in loving wrestling, and obviously this far predates the internet. And just going way out of my way to, you know, get my hands on any magazines. I'd go to the library and find books. Once a VCR became affordable, I would get whatever VHS tapes I could. Just anything that I could get my hands on to study and to absorb, you know, everything and everything about the pro wrestling world. And we live in a day and age now where all of this information is literally at our fingertips. You know, in our pocket with the smartphone gimmicks. But yet, in saying all that, and this, you know, goes back to the topic of paying dues as well and how people just expect things to be handed to them. How is it that so much information is so readily available, but yet so few individuals in the wrestling business now take the time to actually look at the past, to study the business that they're in, to study the art firm they're in. Because realistically, what's been going on for like the last 10 years, this whole video game flippity-flop nonsense, it's run its course. And, you know, in my mind, this is just my opinion, I think what's old will become new again. So all this, the great stuff that people did in the past, you know, when I'm studying stuff, I'm looking at Bobby Heenan in the 70s with the Blackjacks and, you know, whatever Gary Hart stuff or whatever the case may be, even going back to look at Gorgeous George or Buddy Rogers, you know, the stuff that they did that worked, shocking, I know, but it still works now if it's done properly. And I'm really hoping that eventually, you know, people will start to understand this and know, hey, if everybody's doing the same flippity flops on the show, perhaps I need to try something different, go about this in a different way. And it's not doing
right.
a flippity flop off from a higher elevation. It's going and looking to the past and finding the things that are tried and true and that worked and bringing them to the forefront, getting back to the fundamentals. I mean, what I do, I'm to a degree, I think everyone that it's on the phone right now would agree, because we're all doing the same things. We're character driven, story driven,
yep.
touching on emotion, you know, basically getting back to the fundamental basics of what hooked fans to begin with. People like to mix this up and to make it way more complicated than it needs to be. At the heart of pro wrestling, it's good guy versus bad guy. It's touching on emotion. It's sprinkling a little bit of real in with the story that we're trying to convey. And that in and of itself is more than enough to captivate an audience if done properly. But you can't fast forward learning psychology. And that's where we're at right now. You can't
yep.
leapfrog over understanding Absolutely. And learning proper crowd psychology. You can, however, if you're an athletic young dude or young lady, you can learn to do flippity stuff and people can go ooh and ah, but eventually you're going to hit the wall and time is going to run out. And I don't care who you are, eventually, no matter how athletic you are, you'll get to that point where you just physically can't do that stuff anymore. And if you had
exactly.
just
oh,
gone
yeah.
back to the fundamental
oh, most
basics.
Definitely.
Longevity, what? Baby.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. That's exact words right out of my mouth,
I
brother.
Mean,
yes, absolutely.
Sinister and Stroke can tell us better than anybody, you know, how valuable the bump card is.
Oh, yeah. Very valuable. And you know what? And to add on to that, what you just said, when you try to help these guys and give them that information, you know, to preserve their body and preserve their career, the first thing they do, they look at you and say that you're hating. You're a hater, you're jealous of them. And that's what frustrates
Yeah, come talk to me in another 5 years when you've done all that and you've hit that floor one too many times and you get in that ring and say, this guy wants you to do a planche over the top rope. And you look at him and go, no. Yeah,
yeah,
remember that.
Well, I mean, going along with all of this, we're talking about the history. I was deeply saddened, you know, as a student of the game as well as a student of our managerial fraternity, I was deeply saddened this week at the passing of Bobby Davis. Without
yes.
Bobby Davis,
yes,
there would be none of us representing or standing at ringside. We wouldn't exist without Bobby Davis.
Mm-hmm.
That's an excellent point. I'm glad you brought that up. You're absolutely right.
I love, just to touch on what Spectre said, I like to do this sometimes on purpose. If I go to a new area and they got me wrestling somebody I don't know, I normally just say, hey, what do you like to do? Who trained you? Blah, blah, blah. And I try to get a feel for them. A lot of these guys, I go, here's what we're going to do. This is what we'll do in the first 3 minutes. This will be the setup for the finish. You're going over. We're going to set up for your finish. And they look at me and go, well, what about the rest of the match? I go, what do you mean about the rest of the match? I said, I gave you the opening. I gave you the ending. And they look at me and go, what do you mean? You don't know how to call a match? You can't call it in the ring? Well, I wanted to do this, and I was planning on this. I'm like, dude, here's the opening spot, here's the ending spot. We'll call the rest in the ring. We'll feed off the crowd. And they look at you like you're stupid. That's what a lot of these people can't do because they don't know how to tell a story and they can't do it.
They don't get it, Velvet. You know,
I
worked
that,
the match one
just,
time.
I
managed against Jamie Dundee in a singles match. And I had a young kid with me that I was working with. Good kid, good worker, but he was learning. So Jamie pulled the rib on him. Jamie went over the entire match in the locker room with him. Start to finish, all the way through. Just like they would do, super indie style. Bop, 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 all the way to the finish. Jamie pulls me aside before the match. He goes, "Hey, bro, you know when we're going to do the comedy spot?" He goes, "Yeah. We're only going to do the last comedy spot, which is the horsey ride, and then we're going straight to the heat." I said, "How do you want to do it?" He goes, "I'll give you the head nod, and then you trip me." No problem. So we skipped the first two comedy spots after Jamie's shine. We skipped the first two comedy spots, went to the last one. He gave me the Iggy, and I tripped him up, and my guy is looking at me like, "We're all from outer space. What do we do?" I said, "Kick him, stupid." So we went into the heat. Match went perfect.
Oh my God.
To the back. The kid's all freaked out. Don't get me wrong. He wasn't one of these smart aleck kids. He was a good kid. But he learned something
right.
that day. We get to the back, and Jamie's laughing hysterically. And if you ever heard Jamie laugh, it's infectious. Because you will start laughing once you hear him laugh.
Oh, Jamie, yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
He'll go on and on.
And so the kid's like, "Bro, I think I screwed up." "Why?" And he says, "Well, we didn't do those other two spots. We went right to the third one. And then you tripped him. Who told you to do that?" I said, "Jamie did." "Oh, give me a head nod." And he says, "Jamie, that wasn't what we planned on." And Jamie looked at him in between laughing and said, "Son, the people out there don't know what we planned. It's our job to make
exactly.
them believe what we're selling."
That's right.
Exactly.
Yes, sir.
Exactly.
Maybe
like I said,
teleprompter on a blimp. Call her, so.
Right?
Exactly. You know, it wasn't so much that this was a bad kid or a disrespectful kid. He wasn't. But he learned something that day.
Right.
You know, we had another occasion
on that if possible.
Yeah, bud.
Please, there's something I've heard being said repeatedly, but I'm going to use a different phrasing for that. I hear teaching. I hear leading by example. I hear showing people, but you can't make people learn.
True.
Lead a horse to water, but you can't make it.
Yeah, drink. But that's why they get that reverse elbow to the jaw when they come off the rope.
Way to go, little shooter.
You know, and sadly,
I use it a lot, brother.
We've talked about it on a different show.
You stiff bastard, you Velvet.
I know. Shooter McGee over there. He's trying to get even for all the beating Susan Green gave him.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much. All right, let Todd finish.
Flashback.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But seriously, people, we have these learning experiences. Some of them are better than others in life. It's just the way it is.
Yeah.
We can decide to get butthurt about the situation and decide it's everybody else's fault, or we can learn and evaluate ourselves and try to get better. You know what? I'm paraphrasing that old thing about bad experiences come from lack of wisdom, and wisdom comes from bad experiences. It's just kind of the way it is. Live and learn.
And that's an excellent point, because I think that the younger generation is so terrified of making a mistake. I think that's part of the reason why they're so adamant about wanting to go over every last finite detail about a match in the back, because they're so terrified they're going to make a mistake. And to what you just said, man, it's like that's how you learn. Like none of us, nobody – even when we're firing on all cylinders and we're out there and we feel great and we're on the money, I mean it's never perfect, and it's never designed to be perfect. It's as long as the fans are engaged and they're in the match and they're wildly cheering for the baby and booing their asses off for the heel, that's ultimately all that matters. But between the whole this fear of failure
and growing up in the video game, you know, watching YouTube clips of high spots, none of that equates to learning how to put a match together. Just,
right.
I mean, for if you're a fan of wrestling, even just a fan, if you're a fan of wrestling, you know what wrestling is supposed to look like. You know what a match is supposed to look like. You've seen enough matches to know kind of the ebb and flow of how a match is supposed to go. So it really does blow my mind that a lot of younger cats just have no clue how to structure a match. It's like, what have you watched all this time? I mean, have you paid attention to anything? And I think that's the whole thing of – It's one thing to point out to someone that, hey, you've made a
midget
mistake,
work now.
or hey, this didn't happen the way it should have, or whatever, you know. But for them to not pick up on what you're dropping, for them to not put in the work after the fact and go, hey, maybe I should learn a little more about the ebb and flow of a match and the psychology of a match, and maybe I should learn where I should, you know, place my spots and things throughout a match to maximize the emotional roller coaster we're taking the crowd on. For them to not put any of that effort in, any of that work in, any time or consideration into that, it just it blows my mind. It just completely
mm-hmm.
to a large degree it irritates me.
If you're not in it to learn, you might as well hang it up.
And you never stop learning. No matter what role that you're in, in the wrestling business, you never stop learning. You never stop improving. If you think that you know everything, you to get out. None of us. I mean, Stro, you've been all over the world. You've been on worldwide television, and you're still learning to this very day. And I tip my hat to you in the fact that you're still putting in the work,
yes, sir,
and you're still learning. And that in and of itself is an example for anyone in the business to follow, that none of us are that evolved or that fantastic that we still can't learn something new, put a new tool in our toolbox, a new trick to have up our sleeve. There's never a time when learning that ever fully stops, because, you know, just being a man in society, that's how you stay vital, is, you know, constantly learning, constantly doing, constantly growing, man. And all of us in wrestling, it's no different there. It's all the same.
I remember one time years ago, I was talking to Ricky Morton, and I felt really down. Because, you know, I was just starting out in the business, and I felt really bad about the match I had. And I was like, I'm going to screw this up. Ricky, I imagine we messed this up. And said, Ricky put his arm around me and said, don't worry, man. I've screwed up more times than you've had matches.
And I believe it, man. I believe it.
I mean, here, there was a match one time I was a rookie. And, I mean, I was 4 months in the business. We're doing an outdoor show, and Tito Santana's on the card. The crowd was up. The crowd was about 600 people in a park, about 600 people, and they were cheering for everything and booing the bad guys, and, you know, everything as far as the crowd was concerned was perfect. We didn't know what kind of match we had because we were all rookies. Everybody in the match was a rookie. So we get in the back, and Tito's sitting in the tent that was the dressing room, and one of the guys in the match tells me, Tito, do you have any advice for us on your match? And Tito goes, your match was perfect. And the other rookie goes, oh, really? What parts did you see that you liked? He goes, I didn't see any of it. And they said, well, wait a minute. How do you know our match was perfect if you didn't see anything? I listened to the people. They said your match was perfect.
Awesome. Yes.
Awesome.
That's the true sim right there, brother.
Yes, sir.
Preach it.
And then he looked at me and said, but by the way, you sucked. I said, oh, thanks. Appreciate it.
That's funny. That's
a bad
thing.
The match was great, but
it
you
is.
Suck. That's awesome. That is awesome. That's awesome.
Well, that's Tito preparing you for Amy Jo.
Well, no, it was Tito. If you ever, Stro and Sinister will tell you this, when Tito tells you sucked and gives you that sparkle in his eye and that half a smile, you can't help but laugh because you know he's really.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, Todd, getting on the – I don't want to monopolize the conversation, but getting on to Amy Jo. Amy Jo had the unique talent as a fan of walking out on a match that she didn't like and going to outside to have a cigarette.
So one card, I'm sitting upstairs in the locker room, and I just got done cutting promos. Two kids come upstairs from working their match. Hey, bro, did you see our match? I said, no, I'm sorry, I didn't see it. I was cutting promos. I said, well, how do we know if we were any good? I said, where was Amy? Oh, we didn't see her. Then you sucked. She went outside and had a cigarette.
Tough crowd, brother.
You know what?
Tough crowd.
You know what?
No respect. I get no respect.
I can relate to that because that's the life with our sex life, except I'm the one that smokes. That's pretty bad.
Oh.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
It's a master's
story.
I got out. I didn't
want to
sit there.
There you go.
But, you know, you're absolutely right. We alluded earlier about, you know, ability. You know, I mean, you can't hide ability. Either you have it or you don't. I mean, that's why the ring
right.
is like the ultimate truth serum as
no,
to,
yes.
you know,
right.
if you have it or not. So.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't matter what size you are. If you can go, you can go.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. If you're a midget like me or you're Big Game James, who's 6'5", 6'6". It's all good.
Well, I mean, here, take a look at the Miz. Like him or not, he's what, about $180, $185? But he can go. He doesn't look $185
you know,
in the ring.
He
I've never seen Kermit the Frog move so fast. This is great.
You know what?
Agreed.
Over the years, he's gotten a little bit better. You know, in the beginning, he let the notoriety fame go to his head. And now that he's got his TV show and all that, and he's got a couple he's done, he's kind of mellowed out. He's kind of, you know, understands his place, which is good. And he's actually doing what he loves to do at this point. You know, a few years ago,
you know,
he was just going through the motions. But I wanted to
go ahead. Hey, Velvet, you want to know a secret?
Yeah.
It's a work.
Money?
It's a work. It's a work. It's a work. He's
no,
working
he
with
was
your brother.
Not. He was being a jerk. He was being a jerk. He didn't give a
yeah,
shit.
Yeah, but he's not getting hurt. He's had one injury in,
brother?
What, 15 years?
Yeah.
I understand that. But I'm just saying, as a person, I'm talking about the person. I'm not talking about.
Aye.
But no, the Miz is a good example of a guy. The Miz is a good example of a guy who athletically is not, you know, he's not gifted. It's not like there's anything physically he can do that's that extraordinary. He's been able to sustain and last this long because of the character, the promo, the personality, and, you know, to his credit, the work ethic. I mean, he's put the time in to at least, you know, he'll never be, you know, a Dean Malenko, but he's definitely improved
no
to
means.
The point where at least he's passable. He's at least passable in the ring, and I at least give him credit for the fact that he's stuck with it all this time. He's put his time in. Obviously, again, going back to paying your dues and earning respect of the locker room, obviously, you know, early on he had a whole lot of trouble with that. Zero respect for him in the locker room, but he earned it. He earned
like
it
not
over
catching
time.
Our
so
almost brick.
Amongst a lot of other things, but
remember
yes.
Yeah, right. Good Lord.
Oh,
man.
But at the
good
end
thing,
of the day, he put the work in.
Good thing Arthur's
he had
guy.
The dedication and the drive, and he put the work in it. And that at the end of the day, will – that supersedes everything. That supersedes natural talent, athletic ability, whatever the case may be. If you're willing to put the work in, and consistently, chances are that in some way, shape, or form, you'll make it.
Oh, yeah.
Agreed. Totally agree. But, I mean, you know, perception is everything. And I'm not blowing smoke.
Sure.
But the first time I saw Sinister on WCW, I took a double take. I'm like, holy, this guy's huge.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And then I saw you work in the ring, brother, and I'm like, yeah, wouldn't want to meet up with him. But that's, you know, that's me
ring.
As a fan.
I've been in a ring.
Buying into what his persona was. Sinister.
That's why he's sinister.
I've been in the ring against him, and I tagged with him. So I know how Sinister is. I love Sinister. I can't wait to get to work with him again. So, yes, sir.
Yeah. No, perception, perception, is,
perception is definitely reflective of reality.
Yeah.
It's why my it's why I put such a heavy focus on the promos that I produce, that I put on social media, which ultimately help me to get bookings, because I'm already setting the tone and setting the stage for what a promoter can expect from myself and from my talent, giving them a look at how is this going to look, how is this going to sound, how is this going to feel. Ultimately, you know, the perception is reality. What they perceive the act to be is exactly what it's going to be once we walk through the doors. And more often than not, doing that pre-production, putting in the effort to make promos look different, sound different, feel different than the majority, it helps to make us stand apart from the majority, from the pack. And just the promos alone have really helped with getting regular bookings.
That's awesome.
Most definitely, you're telling the story.
Let me ask a question on that. How much has your backside of being on the other side of those things, the photography and all that, helped you preset your promos?
In a huge way, because, you know, you learn the camera, you learn lighting, you learn editing, because I was doing photography, but I was also doing some video work as well. So that has played a huge role in ensuring that what I produce and what I put out consistently looks a higher quality than the majority of other promos that people are releasing. I don't do promos in my living room. Well, technically I do, but you'll never know it's my living room, because I'll make sure that I'm putting in proper lighting and a proper backdrop and doing things in an editing way that make things look different. I don't just hold a phone in my hand and cut a promo. I try to make sure that my stuff has a level of production, and Velvet, you know, because you've seen a lot of my stuff, so you know my stuff is different. It helps to me completely to stand apart from others, and literally I have gotten bookings off from nothing more than promoters seeing those promos and go, I want to book those guys, I want that guy on my show. I think that's something that a lot of younger talents, you know, I know. This is the reason why managers have an active role in wrestling now, because so many younger talents are absolutely terrified of cutting promos. But as much as I appreciate them opening up the door for me to have consistent work, they're cheating themselves of expanding their character and their persona and their brand and their ability to get bookings, because if they took more time and effort to work on their promos and not just work on a standard promo, but to also work on how does that promo look, how does it feel, you know, how can I utilize this as truly an advertisement to help get further bookings, I think if younger talents looked at it more as not just a promo that you're talking and, oh God, I don't want to talk, but rather this is an advertisement. I don't think it computes that promo is short for promotional. I mean, these are promotional ads for each and every one of us. We're all our own brand. As much as that type of talk has become commonplace, how few people really grasp or understand that is, you know, it's perplexing to me. Like, you know, Stro, I know I've used you a few times as an example, but you are a great example of this. I mean, I followed you on Facebook for a long time. I see what you do. You constantly keep yourself active between wrestling, between film, between the podcast, between just you uploading pictures of going to the gym or with your dog. You're constantly doing stuff to keep your brand out there, to make people aware of what you're doing and who you are. And all that stuff is so important in regards to just continuing to build yourself as a star. If you don't, again, perception is reality. If people don't perceive you to be a star, if you're not portraying yourself as a star, how could you ever expect an audience to pay to see you or to think of you as anything other than some local scrub who is wearing, you know, the latest Hot Topic gear and playing a cosplay wrestler down at the local VFW?
You know, you got 100%.
Out of sight, out of mind.
You got the correct
perspective.
This is Dr. John. I got a quick story I want to interject that happened to me last night. I led a ghost hunt, or I invited some folks to come lead a ghost hunt in Greenville, South Carolina. And they came there with all this equipment. They started doing some things, and they forgot to ever address the audience of 18 people, all of which who had paid to be there. So I took over for about 20 minutes, and I let them know that I knew what I was doing. I explained what was going on and everything. And they never did talk to those four ladies. They talked to me the entire time. If you let them know you're in charge and you know what you're doing, you will get the respect of the audience. Am I correct?
Absolutely.
But, Dr. John, I got one question. Since you were in Greenville, did Johnny Valentine show up?
Did he?
What happened to the ladies? Did they stay around, or what happened to them?
The four fat ladies packed up and left as soon as it was over, and I was still doing business with everybody, and I made a whole bunch of new friends. So but that's the whole thing. Get out there.
So wait a minute, you worked after the fat ladies sang? That's awesome.
Oh my God, that is
no,
awesome.
The four fat ladies
sang. They just
well,
the four pleasantly yeah ladies.
Right.
The four.
I believe the term is Rubenesque.
Rubenesque.
Yeah.
I'm still doing business.
Rubenesque. Yes.
Very,
Rubenesque.
Yeah.
Rubenesque.
You know, that's the second job they lost. They used to be on Tuesday Night Titans and on the Bobby Heenan show. That's the second job they lost.
Rossetti sisters, yes.
Wow. Oh, my God. Wow.
What did Bobby Heenan say? He said,
brutal.
Oh, there must be a buffet in town.
Yes.
My God.
Okay, I'll shut up
fantastic.
Now.
Oh, Dr. John, you know we love you. You're just too much of a baby face with a bunch
guys,
of heels. Sorry, brother.
I wouldn't be here. Come on. No, but it was great. You know, it just goes over in anything in the entertainment business.
Yeah, you're just a baby face
right,
who makes a bunch
back.
Of heels.
That's right.
The steak is right. He'll
be back.
Dr. Johnson, since you just brought up the ghost hunt, I'll just bring this up, just a short little story on Halloween night of 2019, I got together a group of people from wrestling who either I directly manage or work with, had them wear my Darkness Worldwide gimmick shirts. On Halloween night, we went to Bobby Mackey's. If you're familiar with Bobby Mackey's, it's in Kentucky, the famous music hall.
Absolutely.
It's been featured on Ghost Adventures. It is an extremely haunted attraction, and they took us through a tour for just our group on Halloween night. We went into the basement of the building, which is where a lot of very funky activity has taken place,
that's called the entrance to hell. I know about it.
We ended up in a room right next to that, and a gentleman that was with me, his name's Joe Copez. He's an amazing referee in our area. Really, of any areas that I've traveled to, Joe Copez is one of the absolute best referees I've ever had the pleasure of sharing a ring with, and that's no joke. But Joe suggested, he's like, you should cut a promo down here. And I'm like, what? And he's like, no, man, while we're here, you should cut a promo down here. So I asked the woman that was taking the tour, would you mind if we explained that we're in the wrestling business, and asked if we could cut a promo. So I cut an impromptu promo with some of the people that I managed in the basement of Bobby Mackey's on Halloween night. It was amazing. Probably if you're into that kind of thing, probably not the smartest thing I could have done in regards to potentially stirring up some rather dubious spirits, but But for the aesthetic, for where we were at, the whole nine, it was amazing, and it completely tied into, you know, the vibe and the feeling that I try to emit or portray with everything that I do with my brand. So that's my ghost hunting experience. I'm actually hoping to once things clear, what's the sanatorium or whatever it is in Kentucky? That's all you've been on Ghost Adventures.
That's the one.
That's the next one that's on the list.
You can have.
I would love to
get
a little crew and go there.
Go lay in the body chute. You do me a favor. You go lay in that body chute. Cut a promo down there. Good
wow.
luck with that. Oh, and
well,
if you
lay
do
out,
that,
I'll think about it.
Hold on.
Bring
tan
lotion.
David, if you're right, if you do that, I will call Peter Popoff and get you some Miracle Spring Water when you get out.
Wow. It's a deal. It's a deal.
Oh, my goodness. There's all kind of things we're going to be hoping to do this year. All of us, I know. I know everybody's trying to stay as busy as possible. Chaz, you got any info you'd like to share?
Nothing on the immediate horizon, but once this nonsense is all over with, which, like I said, I'm hoping is by Thursday, I'm definitely going to be planning the post-COVID Chaz Moretti World Tour. And so I'm looking forward to, you know, working with different promotions and organizing that. I'm hoping that in April the Cauliflower Alley Club reunion is going to be happening again because, David, I don't know if you're aware, but that is a great resource not only for networking but also for learning about our great sport that we love and getting to interact with different people. I mean, it's kind of weird because when they have the Casino Royale show, the fans, I don't know if the fans really realize the all-star talent that's in the Battle Royal, for instance. And, I mean, you know, there's managers pretty much with just about everybody out there. And, you know, a lot of these younger guys are like, well, what do I do? You manage. Who do I manage? Manage your guy. How? Figure it out for yourself, kid. Sorry. But,
I was at the 2019 one because my trainer, Cody Hawk, received the trainer award from CAC.
Well, then I saw you there because Cody Stable was right in front of me.
Yeah, so you probably did. You probably did, yes, sir. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm actually very I'm very sad that Cauliflower got canceled last year because the Road Warriors were supposed to get the tag team award and Paul and Animal were supposed to be there, and now unfortunately Animal has passed away, and it just sucks. There's just so much about that I wish hadn't happened.
Yeah, it would have been nice.
Because I would have loved to have seen him get that honor while he was still alive.
Well, to quote South Park, blame Canada.
Right. Everything's Canada's fault.
Good chance.
Oh my goodness.
Canucks over there complained. And it got canceled. So blame Canada.
Oh, that's so rude. Papa Stroh.
Yeah, I'm right.
Yes, sir.
Papa Stroh. With everything you got going on, tell us what you got going on coming up this week and in future endeavors that you'll be doing.
Well, hopefully I won't be future endeavored for anything anytime soon, but
not
I'll let you know when I get the FedEx with the pink slip, you know what I mean? But
Okay. I'll have to do that for you one day.
In the room, podcast is Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on viewsnation.com. Brady Hicks, Kathy Fitzpatrick, Dermot McDonald, Matt Groom, myself. Then this Thursday, WCW Retro, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on viewsnation.com. And then Friday night at midnight Eastern Standard Time, my horror sci-fi show, The Stroh Zone, on my Facebook page, which is facebook.com/StrohTheMaestro. And the feature for this Friday night will be Tober the Great. From the 50s. So
nice.
Ooh.
All right, I'm tuning in.
One. Yes. Nice.
That sounds right up my alley, Stroh. Absolutely.
Awesome.
So,
hope you enjoy it.
Sinister, what you got going on in your life right now? What keeps you busy right now?
Well, you know, I'm still training and still, you know, practicing, getting myself in shape. And, you know, I just ask for everybody's prayers because my mom, she's having surgery next week. You know, she's having a knee replacement. So I'm going to spend a few days with her, help her rehabilitate. Yeah,
okay.
She's been in need for a while.
All the best for your mother.
Good karma.
Praying
for
you. Absolutely.
Well, thank you
so much. So, David, what do you got going on here in the future? Got any bookings, working on stuff? What you got going on?
Thankfully, even with the world as it is, I've been very fortunate and very blessed to have pretty consistent bookings pretty much every weekend. I have bookings that are lined up through the end of March at this point, and then we'll be adding more on in the subsequent weeks. But every Friday night, I work for Future Great Wrestling in Hamilton, Ohio. David Barnabas Spector, the leader, is the FGW general manager. Believe it or not, I'm the authority figure. In addition, I also represent my 300-pound abomination, Kronos the Berserker. A few other quick dates. Saturday, January 30th, Primitive Pro Wrestling in Bedford, Indiana. Kronos won the heavyweight title there earlier this month. This will be our first time back to defend the championship. Saturday, February 20th, we're back at Extreme Valley Wrestling. That's in Franklin, Ohio. Every time we are there, mischief, havoc, and chaos ensues. So that's definitely for the folks in the area. They'll definitely want to come out. And then on Sunday, February 28th, AWR Asylum Wrestling Revolution. That's in Indianapolis, Indiana. It is at the Emerson Theater. So that is a music venue. With myself being a huge music fan, that's actually a venue that I had gone to previously to see Doyle from the Misfits play in his own band. It's an awesome venue. As a manager, the acoustics in there, because, you know, I like to talk. So when I'm ringside, to be able to shout disparaging comments at our opponent for the evening, to hear the acoustics in that building, it's fantastic. AWR is also available on IWTV, so we're definitely looking forward to being back there. But yes, I'm thankful that we're, you know, consistently booked essentially every weekend. And for each and every one of you gentlemen, I definitely want to thank you for the invitation and having me on this evening. I definitely feel like it's been an awesome experience, just great company. And it's nice to know that there are other individuals out there that still believe in the fundamental lifeblood of pro wrestling, the things that have always made the business and the art form survive and thrive, getting back to the fundamentals, knowing that, you know, that the business was built upon a foundation of respect, an honor, a brother and sisterhood, of good versus evil, of great storytelling, of tapping into emotion. It's awesome to know that I'm not alone and still believing that all those things are still just as relevant today as they've ever been.
Agreed.
Absolutely.
You know, you were saying that you were a world-class fan. I'm just going to give a brief plug to one of our friends. Vince Berry wrote an excellent book on Lance Beiner called Lance by Chance. If you have the opportunity, pick it up. You'll love that read.
Awesome.
Yes, he did.
I got five. Here, I have to give up.
There you go.
Yes, sir. Well, hit me with that, Velvet. We'll talk about distro.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later, yeah. Dr. John?
Yes?
What do we have set up for next week by chance there, sir? Ha-ha.
Well, okay. We're going to be announcing that. We've got we're doing a series. I'm trying to work with Velvet. We're trying to do a series on new wrestlers who are exciting and good. We had one on last week. We had Matthew Vaughn. We've got one coming up next week. I'll divulge his name tomorrow when I post it. And then we'll have hopefully the great Susan Green, one of the greatest female wrestlers in history. I am privileged to be writing her biography. And it's a lot of fun getting to know Susan. She's one, truly one of the nicest people I've ever met. She's nicer than any of you guys.
My question is, how many chapters has she dedicated to beating the crap out of Velvet?
Not enough. We're working on it, but we love her.
Holy crap! And listen,
I got a couple other things.
That's in the book. No. If that's in the book, I'm gonna love it. If not, I'm just gonna get beaten for it. But good.
And so anyway, yeah, working on her book, working on a book called The Haunted Ring. And Dave, I'm gonna call you because I like your story about Kentucky. So I'm gonna call you about that. I think that'd be a good story to put in there. On Wednesday night, we've got Pop Culture Stars, Todd Saxon, who's on here tonight. He's on there with me. We're going to have a lot of fun. And I'm just waiting for – do what?
Velvet's
what did you say,
show.
Todd? What?
I said Velvet's on Pop Culture Stars.
Oh, Velvet's
as well.
On there, too. Yeah, Velvet's on everything. So, I mean, it doesn't matter. Now, of course.
Wow.
That's what I've got going on, and I'll be on and I'll be back on WCW Retro for the rest of the year, starting this Thursday, and it's great to have everybody on here. So we got a lot of great things coming up, and and tomorrow night Papa Stro will be with me, and Velvet will be on for ScaryCast at 9 p.m. I'm gonna tell all about my ghost hunt this weekend. And announce a big public ghost hunt in Greenville, South Carolina here in about 2 months.
No,
at a major museum.
No Cowboys this week? That'll be a first.
Right?
no, Billy the Kid's coming back next week. He's coming back next week.
When you bring on Blackjack Morgan, let me know. Then I'll listen.
Right. Right. I want to say one thing to our guest, David. We would love to have you back, so anytime that you have some time, we would love to expand some more about what you got going on. Plus, you can tell us what you've been up to the next time we talk and how your bookings are still going. So hopefully they're going to go well.
And I absolutely appreciate that. I would love to come back on and talk about whatever you gentlemen would like to talk about. I enjoyed our conversation this evening, fellas, so I would be more than happy to come back.
Oh, pleasure having you, brother.
Yeah,
that
was awesome.
Yeah, big time. Hey, David, can I ask a couple questions? Indianapolis is my second home.
Yes, sir.
That's actually where the business is that I work out of. This is kind of trying to work a plug in for you because I normally live up there and work out of there away from my family. And I know you're Justin Cincy, and actually I have a pseudo-family there. My Marine Corps adopted daughter lives out there. She goes by Pita DQ. You might see the license plate. And just so you know, if you see the Pita DQ license plate, it stands for Pain in the Ass Drama Queen.
I deal with her.
When you're doing stuff in Indianapolis, how can I find out about that? Or when you're doing stuff in Indiana, because I understand, I thought I heard earlier in the green room, we got stuff going on in Indiana, and normally
hopefully
I live and
we'll
work
have
up
something
there.
Going on in there. Hopefully we'll have something going on. I got one person told me something, and I got another person who actually lives up there that wants to do something. So, I mean, I've heard a couple of things. Just working on that. We haven't settled anything yet, but we'll let Todd, you'll be the first one to know, trust me.
In regards to anything that I have going on, whether it be in Indiana or really anywhere, you know, Indianapolis or any other city throughout Indiana or, you know, really any state. You know, I try to be very consistent with posting on my social media account. So it's David Barnabas Spector. The faction name is Darkness Worldwide. You can find me pretty much on everything, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. I'm on all three. But if you search me out on any one of those, you'll see consistent posts about, you know, upcoming events. Normally, again, because I'm known for the promos that I produce,
I'm always putting out new promos for upcoming events. So if you periodically check my social media, you'll see any upcoming events that we have on the horizon. But I appreciate you asking about that.
I got to take back over because we've got 20 seconds. The British lady will sing.
Fat
and
lady
I want to say
thanks
to everybody for being on here. And Velvet, thanks for being a great co-host. Papa Strode, thanks for being a great co-host. All of our favorite guests that were on here tonight, we're glad you're here. We'll see you next week, 10 p.m. Eastern Time.
All right, guys.
On one, the only.
Good night, all. Good night.
Good night. Bye.
Take care of one another out there. Stay safe.
All right.
God bless. Goodbye.